Today's episode of the Mighty Parenting Podcast is brought to you by Acree, the on-demand virtual writing tutor for students. Acree has a quick tip for parents today. Their tip is to remember that the college essay is usually a topic that is personal or sometimes sensitive to our children. And while we may want to be helpful and we may want to give feedback, they might not feel comfortable showing their writing to parents or family members. So help them find another adult they can show or use an objective writing resource like Acree, which maintains their privacy but assures high-quality writing feedback. You can learn more and get a free trial at acree.com, E-C-R-E-E.com.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and we are talking about college and writing today. I know college is definitely on a lot of minds at this time of year. The final application deadlines are approaching for seniors, and juniors are planning those campus visits. And it's just such a huge decision for our kids, for us. It's an important one, and it often gets handled in kind of a fog of confusion, or even with our kids flying by the seat of their pants. Or you get that flip side where, you know, there's the kid who's totally into this, totally on it, they're absolutely organized, and they're just going to be crushed if they don't get into the college of their dreams. So what is a parent to do about this? Listen to this podcast. We've got your back, and so does today's guest. Her name is Gabrielle Glancy, and she is a college admissions counselor. Gabrielle's taken her experience as an admissions director, a teacher, and a college admissions counselor, and paired that with her writing talent to help kids get into the college of their dreams. She's the author of two books, The Art of the College Essay and Unstuck, How to Break Through Writer's Block, Find Your Voice, and Get into the College of Your Dreams. So Gabrielle, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Mighty Parenting today.
I'm delighted to be here.
So you started New Vision Learning, which is where you are providing assistance as a college counselor these days. I want to start out though by talking about what exactly is a college counselor?
Well, I think it's become very, as the college process has gotten more complicated, and it has since, you know, I applied to college many years ago. And of course, all the parents that I'm, you know, I work with 17 and 16, 17 and 18 year olds, and their parents who are pretty much my age, always say to me, wow, this is not what we did, you know, take the SATs three times, have so many essays to write and apply to so many schools. That's not, you know, what we did when we were applying. And I've been in the business a long time, probably about, this is my 30th year. So I'm really an expert in my field, and I've been around the block. And, you know, it's come to a place where to put that on a family, a parents, or, you know, just a junior and senior, the burden of figuring out, navigating all the pieces of the college admissions puzzle on their own, and then writing the essays, it's really multiple essays, that will, you know, turn the golden key and get them in when they don't even really know how to write narrative personal statements, which is what is being asked of them. That's a lot to bear. And I think it overwhelms parents. It definitely overwhelms students. And, you know, it's so, it's become such a stressful, high stakes game that you've got people these days wheeling and dealing and scheming and scamming to get their kids into college because they're afraid that they're not going to be able to do it any other way. Well, the honest way to deal with the overwhelm and the fear is to seek, you know, honest help from someone who can help you navigate the process. So as an answer to your question, you know, an upstanding college counselor who has integrity can be an unbelievable resource in helping navigate what has become a complicated and overwhelming process.
So if we're thinking about this or coming to the point where our kids really need to start dealing with this, what would you say was really the first step that our teens should be taking on this journey?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it depends upon which element you're looking at, but it's funny. I've seen students as young as fifth grade. To me, they sat on my couch, their legs didn't even reach the ground. And I think that's a little bit too early. But when you're talking about preparing, laying the foundation for a high school career that is enriching, fulfilling, that is helping a student find themselves and find their path, that begins at the beginning. So that begins in ninth grade because they're choosing classes. They're choosing a trajectory that they're going to follow.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, they need to be thinking about what they're going to do in high school. But I like the way you said that, Gabrielle. I found that when my kids were going through high school, all the pressure was about taking AP classes and getting credits and trying to even, you know, get an associate's degree before you graduate high school. But what you talked about was selecting courses and going through a thought process of how do I help my child find themselves, find what they are good at, what they're interested in, what could be a good career path for them.
Yes. Yes. I mean, in ninth grade, you're not so much thinking about a career path per se. You're just advising about advising on which classes or which path, you know, because sometimes there are schools that have engineering paths. So if you start in the ninth grade and you want to take the engineering path when you're a junior and senior, then you have to have certain prerequisite classes. So it has to do with course selection is one element. It also has to do with extracurricular activities. You know, there's not infinite amount of time after school. School, after all, is from whatever, 7:30 or 8 till 3 or 2:30 or 3. You know, there's not infinite time. There's homework and so forth. So what a student chooses to do with their free time or do as electives, even in the school day, is very important and often one of the factors that help them decide the paths that they want to follow. It's a great opportunity to explore various avenues of interest. So, I mean, you don't really want to wait till a junior year. You know, sometimes when I meet with families in the junior year, which a lot of people come to me then, particularly in January, February, March of junior year, is a really good time to start thinking about the essays and choosing colleges. But at that point, I often say, oh, I wish I met you 2 years ago, because you didn't take the classes that would prepare you for the path you're actually interested in. So if you start in ninth grade, even just to meet once with a family in ninth grade, then at least you're not in that position of saying, oh, I wish I met you 2 years ago, because you would have taken a different path, you know? So
yeah.
I think it's great. If I love it when students come to me in the ninth grade and I can meet with families early, because then I can help them really think about what they're going to do and the road to college and laying that foundation, in a way, building a portfolio and making choices that are going to be good choices for them.
And when you start it a little earlier, it feels to me like it doesn't have to be so much pressure about my putting together my college resume. It's more what you want to design for your life and hear experiences in college, activities and courses and things that can help you along the way and help you explore things and look at areas of interest to you and actually spend some time in those. I know in episode 92, we had a conversation that touched on some of these similar ideas with Dennis Tretien. So I think actually that would be a great addendum to this podcast for any mighty parent who's listening to pick that up, because it will mesh well with what we're learning from Gabrielle. So when it comes to selecting a college, I saw on your blog that you talked about the idea that one of the important things is not just creating a list, but putting the right school on your list. What do you mean by that?
Well, sometimes parents particularly come with an idea about where they want their kids to go. If it's not a school particularly, it could be just Ivy Leagues, you know, or Stanford, or a very high top tier school that they have an idea that they want their kids to go to. That may or may not be the right fit for that particular student. You know, it's not one size fits all at all. Every school has a completely different flavor. And I actually composed a list, I think it had 60 items. And in just doing my own research, because I'm, you know, steeped in the field, I looked around to see if anybody had as comprehensive a list of criteria that students could use. It's on my website, it's on my blog on choosing a college list. And I couldn't find a list as comprehensive as the one that I've made over the years. Just asking students, like, is it important to you to see green? You know, like, do you need grass? I had a student who was choosing colleges on grassy quads. I said to her, well, you went on your college tour. What'd you think? She said, oh, Columbia has a really good quad. It's very, there's a lot of trees, and there's these steps to the library that you can sit on. And she said, but NYU, it just doesn't have, you know, much grass. And I kept listening to her, and I realized that the grass, green grass, was one of her top priorities. And, you know, you have to laugh, but still, that's what she wanted. She wasn't going to be happy in a school that was concrete, that didn't have a quad, grassy quad to sit in, you know. There's a lot of criteria. I mean, some people want certain internships or involvement with the community. Some people want fraternities and sororities. Some people don't want fraternities and sororities. It has to do with what major you might be interested in, whether it's interdisciplinary majors or it's more a traditional path, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, in a sense, well, when I'm working with a student, my priority is to listen really deeply to what they're saying and who they are, to try to help them understand what is important to them. So you can say, what's the most important thing to you? That's hard for, say, a 10th grade, you know, 14-year-old, 15-year-old. What's the most important thing to me? What's most important thing to me? Baseball, you know, and then you have to say, well, I mean, in a college, I would never ask a question in that way. I just talk to them. And then from listening very deeply to what they're saying about their present life and what they're doing, and I can reflect back to them. It sounds like intimate connection with you know, people and with your teachers, that you've befriended teachers, that you go up after class, that you're, you know, been friends with teachers in your junior year or close to teachers in your junior year, that you're now going to ask for a recommendation, who you worked with in freshman year, that you, your classmates are very important to you. It sounds like connection is very important. Yes, yes, connection is very important to me. Okay, so you probably don't want a school with 70,000 people. You know, you're going to want a more intimate environment. Yes, I want a more intimate environment. So it's really a matter of not so much demanding from a student that they know what they want and they know who they are. They're developing. So you can't ask that of them, you know. Mm-hmm. But what you can ask is for them, you know, when I approach the whole process, I just ask questions. I listen closely. I look closely at the student. I'm really feeling out their sort of vibe, I guess, and then reflect back to them what I hear. And from there, you can make a list of possible schools. And that's how I do it. It's kind of from the inside out, which is the same way I teach writing. But often, I think people approach it from the outside in. What do you want to be when you grow up? Where do you want to go to school? What do you want to achieve? Instead of speaking to a student and gleaning from what they tell you and then reflecting back to them. And in that way, the process becomes one of self-discovery, which is really what I'm all about.
Well, and like you said, it's also understanding what those schools are like and are they a fit? The fact that they have the achievements that it makes sense for them to apply doesn't make that school a good fit for them, even if it is a top-tier school. Exactly. Or even if it's an Ivy League school.
Exactly.
So it's, I love this idea of looking for the right school and making a list of right schools. So yes. Then when you get to that point of doing the college road trips and visiting campuses, now you're seeing how does a right fit feel to me. It makes me crazy when I see kids with not having really a good idea of what school makes sense for them, just going to a campus and go, yeah, that campus felt good. I'm totally with the idea that you do have to be comfortable on your campus, but you're telling us, Gabrielle, what's really important to look at first before we make sure that the campus itself is comfortable. And that leads me to the thought of, I'm kind of wondering, like, what mistakes are kids making when it comes to applying for college? Because to me, that was a mistake in, like, you know, choosing a college. What mistakes are they making when they apply to college?
Well, I would say starting too late is one of the biggest ones, because it's a process, you know, and sometimes you start out with a list of 30 schools. You have to whittle it down. You have to have schools that are what I call targets, safeties, and reaches on your list. You have to have a good spread. I have students cast a wide net. I mean, sometimes they don't apply to enough schools. Sometimes they apply to too many schools and they can't handle it. But really, the college essays are critically important. I speak all the time to large groups of people. I mean, a lot of people want to speak to me because I was in admissions. And so I sat on the other side of the table and read applications and made decisions about who got in and who didn't, and trained a staff of people to also make those decisions. So I know what the conversations are behind closed doors. And that was utterly enlightening for me. And then breaking free and becoming a, you know, independent college counselor, because I knew what was going to be talked about. And the essays are really critical. I mean, an essay that moves the college admissions committee or the college admissions director can make or break you. You know, if it's a really beautiful, moving, revealing, authentic piece of writing, you know, then the admissions committee will be much more likely to say yes. In fact, sometimes they just can't say no. I mean, they will, like, look over the top of their glasses to make sure they can accept you, because they want to accept you. That's very different than, you know, reading an essay. I mean, when I was in admissions, we got 30,000 essays. We had to reject 28,000. I mean, and you're falling asleep when you're reading most of them. It's just so boring. On the occasion when you read an essay that, you know, grabs you by the collar and won't let go, you throw down your reading glasses, you elbow the guy next to you, you say, read this, and then you look to make sure you can accept this. And okay, it's an AB student, you know, we can accept the student, because you want to accept the student. The other 28,000, you can't even plow through the essay. It's so poorly written or boring, or, you know, last summer I. They all start last summer, you know, whatever. So the essay is a piece of the puzzle that's just very, very important. And I think the mistake that people make is to start too late, because you don't want, on top of the pressure that's built into it, because the stakes are so high. I mean, it's a really pivotal moment. You know, you can always transfer, but, you know, deciding what college to go to and then getting in and going to that college, it's pivotal. It's going to determine your 4 years, your career, the contacts you make, your potential best friends for life. I mean, I'm still dear friends. My best friend in the world I met in college. I have contacts that I helped my career from college, and I have a lot of friends from college. Interestingly enough, I went for 1 year somewhere that really didn't work for me. So maybe that really taught me a lot. And then I transferred and it was really wonderful. So I think that the biggest mistake is starting too late, because if you start early, if you make other mistakes, you have time to fix them.
This is true. And you have time to really work on those essays. Because, as you said, that's a critical part. And that's what both of your books are about. So let's dig in a little. When you were talking about the essay there, you said, you know, they're just so boring. Last summer, what are admissions counselors, you know, what grabs them in an essay? What kind of an essay does that?
My answer to that is a kind of interesting one. I often say to students, there's not a million ways to write an essay. There are just not a million ways. There are infinite ways to write an essay. So my answer to your question is, there's an infinite amount of things that could grab the admissions. I think an essay that's written from the heart, that's really authentic, that really tells a story where the two dimensions on the page become three dimensions and you feel like that student is standing in front of you. You can almost like, you know, just feel the student, the energy and the you can almost see them because it becomes so alive. However you do that, and of course there are ways to do that, that's why I have a job. When you do that and you can bring yourself to life on the page, because that is where the admissions committee meets you. The numbers are numbers. You know, you have a 3.5, you've gotten three B's. You know, the recommendations are by and large all excellent. Who would ask anybody to write a bad recommendation? Students only ask teachers who are going to write them good recommendations. So they're only looking for red flags, really, in reading recommendations. So you got grades, those are numbers, the recommendations only if there's a red flag or if there's something outstanding or salient that somebody has to say. SAT scores, again, it's numbers. So you're reading all that stuff. There's no like juice, there's no life there's in it. You know, and it's you still have to look at it, but it's not very interesting. So the essay is where you shake the hand of the student and look into their eyes, but they're not in front of you because very few places are physically interviewing students anymore. So that's the place where you come to life. And how you do that, as I said, there's an infinite amount of, you know, there's an infinite ways to do that. But obviously you have to write an essay that, well, and the other thing is you can't just have a good opening line. An opening line is crucial. It's critical because that'll get them to line two. And line two will get them to line three or sentence three. Sentence three will get them to sentence four. I often demonstrate this as if I'm pulling a net out of water, one hand over hand. You have every sentence must do work, I often say. So, but you don't sit down to write an essay and start that way. Like, I have to have a good opening. Okay, what am I going to, what am I going to do to open this? What can I do that's interesting? Now I need she says every sentence must do work. What will my second sentence be that will pull them along so they'll keep reading? Nobody writes like that. That's what the product has to contain in order to keep the interest of a very bored reader. And the reader, I am telling you, I often like to say, you know, when I was in the business of reading college essays, my Starbucks mocha cappuccino was calling my name. It was to the left of the computer screen. And, you know, I was nodding off. And then I saw somebody out the window who looked interesting. Then I yawned and stretched my arms over my head, right? Because I'm preparing to be bored on the occasion when the essay just leaps off the page and I can't stop reading. I never get to my mocha cappuccino. That student's going to get in. The student's going to get in. Because otherwise, and if I get to my coffee, I have to reject 28,000 students. So if I get to my coffee, you're toast.
If we need a great essay, and there are lots of ways to do this, but we don't sit down and go, okay, I got to write, like you said, I got to start with a great opening line. How do we start? What kind of process can we, well, actually, before we do that too, I want to go back again. I actually talked about the opening. I commented about the difference between the kind of writing you were going to talk about and what is actually an argumentative essay. I loved in your work, you said the college essay isn't really a college essay. It's a narrative personal statement. Okay. So maybe let's first talk about the difference in what this quote unquote college essay is compared to what kids are used to writing.
Right. That's a great question and a great point. So they're not used to writing narrative personal statements almost at all. I would say I'll work with a student and say, what's a narrative personal statement? I'm not sure. Have you written any reflections, you know, where you've spoken about your life? And almost all of them say, yes, every year we did that. Oh, good, I say, that's great. Let's talk about it. What did you write? Everybody says the same thing. You can probably guess what it is. They come to school and their teachers say, okay, we're going to do some writing. What did you do on your summer vacation? And that's all they've ever really written that's in the form of a narrative personal statement. Nobody tells them what a narrative personal statement is. They don't know. I'm meeting junior seniors who don't really know what that means. And some of them, sometimes the smartest ones who are applying to, you know, Columbia, Yale, Princeton, Harvard, wherever, UCLA, you know, they don't know what a narrative personal statement is. And they're sending me in advance, because I often ask them to send me a writing sample. They're sending me their college, the first draft of their Common App narrative personal statement, their college essay, and it's in the form of an argumentative essay. And I have to say, you know, you're a good writer, and I'm really excited to work with you, and we have to completely scrap this. That would be like, you know, I don't know how to put it, but it's in the wrong form. You know, it's not what they're looking for. A narrative personal statement, the word narrative means story. So they're actually story essays. They're essays that tell stories. And how you do that...
It's kind of like I ordered a baked potato in a restaurant and they bring me a mashed potato or French fries. It's still a piece of writing. You know, it's still a potato.
Yes.
But they're completely different forms.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And then when you say to them, you know, no, we're doing French fries. You know, we're not doing mashed potatoes. We're doing French fries. They're like, oh, well, how do you get them to be French fries? You know,
yeah.
They're like, they don't know how to go from mashed to French fries. But they're also really, really trained in how to write argumentative essays in a very formulaic way. And everyone recognizes it. I often say to them, you know how to do this, right? You write an introduction, they nod. The introduction has your thesis. Yes, they say, has the thesis. The thesis is the main idea for the essay, and it will have in it supporting points you refer to in your intro. Yes, 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 they say. And then I say, and then you're going to use those supporting points for topic sentences and then draw a conclusion that reiterates what your main point. Absolutely, that's what we're doing. Well, that's an argumentative essay. It's actually a very formulaic way to go about argumentative essays, but I have a lot to say about that, but that would be a different interview. But that's what they know how to do. And then you sit them down and say, okay, so we're going to write a college essay. And it's a narrative personal statement. And they have no idea how to start. And I guess your question was, how do you start?
Right.
I do it, I go around the back door. So I get them to write and I get them into what I call the worry-free zone, where they write and write and write without any anxiety. So I get them into a place where they're free writing, they're free and they're writing without anxiety. I wouldn't say I trick them, but I get them to a place where they're not any more concerned with writing an introduction or the body or the conclusion, or even with knowing what they're writing about. You know, a very well-known colleague of mine speaks about finding the topic. You know, if you have a topic, great. If you don't have a topic, great. You start writing, you'll have a topic. I'll tell you a quick story, Sandy, that recently I gave a talk to an audience of, parents and their 11th graders, or rising seniors even by that point. Some of them were seniors too. And there was a whiteboard in the room, and on the whiteboard it had three words, grass, bunny, and hamster. And I was chatting about answering the question you're basically asked me, how do you begin? And I said, it doesn't matter where you start. It really doesn't matter where you start. For example, I said, you see on the board, bunny, grass, hamster. Let's choose one of those words. So I had them vote, and the majority of people voted for a hamster. I said, okay, good. So I handed out index cards, big index cards, like 5x8, and pens. And I said, I want you to write for 3 minutes, everybody, parents, students, 11th graders, 12th graders, on the subject of hamsters. Everybody was laughing and giggling and squirming because writing is hard for everybody, so they get scared. And I said, don't worry about it. Full sentences, which is what I say with free writing, full sentences, write whatever you want in whatever order you want to write it in, whatever comes to mind, kind of stream of consciousness on a hamster. So the very fact that it was a game made everybody play with it. And obviously it wasn't a college essay. I was just asking them to write on the word hamster, which is totally ridiculous, right? 60 people in the audience, everybody wrote on the word hamster. After 3 to 5 minutes, I stopped them and I said, great. Okay, let's go around. Can somebody read me, any volunteers, can you read me your free write on the word hamster? It was phenomenal. Most of the people had seeds of their college essay in their writing about the word hamster.
Really?
Yeah. So I had a kid who said, we had a hamster until I was about 8. His name was Jeffrey. One time his head got caught in the treadmill. And we heard this like squeaking sound. We came in to find that Jeffrey, his head went between the wires in the treadmill that he runs around. And I was like, okay. And I listened to the next kid. The next kid said, we had a hamster, but the year we got him, our fish died, our turtle died, and then our hamster died. And it was the first time that I had any experience with death. I said, great, that sounds really good. And the third one. We never had a hamster, because they're free associating, but we had a ham radio. And one time there was a hurricane, and my dad and I listened to the staticky report of the hurricane coming, right? And so it was a discussion about he and his dad listening to the ham radio because they never had a hamster. He didn't know what else to say. I was just amazed. So I said, I ended up asking questions of the people who had shared and said to the person whose hamster was called Jeffrey, that's a beautiful story. Can you give me another example in your life in which you felt really overwhelmed and blah, 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 blah. And the kid will say, oh yeah, I mean, the AP test, there's like 5 of them. And I, you know, and that time, and then I got the flu and I couldn't go. And so the kid got caught in the treadmill, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's what I ended up seeing. I knew this to begin with. I did the exercise because I knew that it's like a Rorschach test. It doesn't matter where you begin. Everybody will be themselves, and they will reveal pieces of themselves to you and to themselves that could be useful in writing anything, you know, that writing their college essay.
So let me see if I'm understanding this. Something that we could do to help out our kids is if, because I remember my daughter just sitting there going, I don't know, you know, just sitting on the couch, I don't know what to say. So we could even just go, okay, write about and pick a word, hamsters or s'mores or anything,
right,
and have them just write about that. And then we can read it and go, can you tell me another time that, and then pick out whatever they told you in there, you know, a time when a friend hurt their feelings, a time where they had to do something they were uncomfortable with, a time where they felt overwhelmed. It doesn't matter. It's whatever they wrote about. Can you tell me another time that?
That's also a very good thing to do. I mean, the hamster idea is the extreme, which is nobody suggested it. It's not, it's just a really extreme. But even mm-hmm. with the extreme idea, we were able to get things that were like seedlings for potential further writing. But what I actually ask students to do is a little bit more on point for what the college essay is going to be doing and for narrative personal statements. I ask them to find often, and again, I want to emphasize, this is only one of an infinite number of exercises. You could ask them to find, to mention 5 objects in their life that have been important. Yes, the pocket watch my grandfather gave me, the my first baseball that I caught when I went to see the Giants play, the whatever it is, 5 objects. You could do 5 adjectives. It doesn't even have to be 5. I'm just using that. Mm-hmm. So it really doesn't matter. But my favorite one, and it seems like it's been the most successful, I think, well, for various reasons, is I ask them to find 5 significant moments in their life in which they went into a moment, one person, and they came out changed. It changed them. Even if it's, something as simple as walking down the street, having just had a terrible experience and finding a $100 bill. That's an instantaneous experience, but it's a significant one because the student realizes that your luck can change at any minute. So Walking down the street, you find a $100 bill. You're going to write your college essay on that? No, not necessarily. However, if the student marks that as a significant moment, it's going to relate to something else that they're that is important to them. So say one of them is that. Give me another significant moment. And I also emphasize to them, I think the other reason that this is important and works so well, not just a significant object, although you can do that too, is that for a narrative you need, which is a story, you need a place and a time and character, so to speak. So when I ask them to choose a moment, we get a real time, a real thing that happened at a place and a time. And that's a great starting point. So if they say, well, yeah, I was walking down the street and I found a $100 bill. You know, I had gotten very upsetting news that day, you know, that my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then I was downtown and I couldn't believe it. And I walked down the street and I found a $100 bill as one of their significant moments. We have a real place. You're walking down the street in a real city, in a real town. You found a real object. You had real feelings, because then I'll have them reflect on it. And it has a context. Well, what was going on then? Well, we just found out my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, right? So the significant moments, and it's amazing because I don't tell them to begin with that their significant moments are probably connected. I just have them write 5 significant moments in bullet points. I don't even need full sentences. And they come up with 5 significant moments. They read them to me. I say to them, don't spill the beans, just give me the gist. And they speak to me about what those 5 significant moments were or are. And I mean, sometimes it's amazing. I had a kid who wrote 5 significant moments. 3 of them were really powerful. One of them was watching a video of a lifeguard, trying to pass the test to become a lifeguard. You had to watch a video of security camera footage of a kid drowning in a hotel pool. They made all the potential lifeguards watch the video. So he watched the video of this kid grueling, you know, being thrown into the deep end by the counselor or the lifeguard in the pool. And then the lifeguard goes to get a Coke at the vending machine, and you're watching the security camera footage, and the kid is drowning. Then he writes this other one about going down the hillside, you know, sitting on their butts at camp, going down the hillside. And his third one is about his friend who was bipolar and went off the deep end. The kid looks at me, he was a skeptic, and he said, okay, you know, here's the 3 significant moments, whatever. And I had him free write, and he wrote, you know, that his friend Andrew went off the deep end and blah, blah, blah. Now what do we do? So I free wrote on all these moments, but I don't want to write an essay on any of them. And I looked at him and I said, well, I mean, the kid went off the deep end. And he was like, yeah. And I said, the deep end. And he was like, oh my God, because it connected to the kid who drowned in the deep end in his lifeguard story. Does this happen every time? It does. That's what's amazing. It happens every time. So they give me 5 significant moments and they say, these aren't, you know, but they're not related. At least 3 of them will be about the same subject. Of course they will, because they're coming from the same psyche, the same life story. So
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I get them writing first, and then they happen upon moments that are connected. And the other thing, Sandy, that's beautiful about this is they've done all this writing in the worry-free zone where they don't have anxiety. So they've written really well, you know, and then most of the writing's done. All we do is read it to figure out what's a good first line. And it's usually in there. We just pluck it out, put it at the top, and then figure out where would we go from there. So the writing is done with little or no anxiety. And it's when they're not worried about writing the college essay that they do the writing for the college essay. And then, as I like to say, we read what you've written to figure out what you're trying to say, instead of the other way around.
I love that. And you're right. It's so counterintuitive. So just, I'm going back and just hitting, you know, kind of the high points of what we said is that when it comes to college applications, it is important to start early with the whole concept and looking at how your child wants to experience high school areas of interest they want to go to, courses that might fit areas of interest or things they might want to do for a career. If they don't know, explore it. Want them to be looking for, when they start looking for schools, to be first thinking about them. Like, what's important to them? Are they a nature person? Do they need that green space on campus? Do they need lots of activities? Do they want or don't want Greek life? All those different things to help make a list of right schools. So then when you go visit, you're choosing from schools that are already a good fit for you. And again, starting early is with applications. Kids tend to start too late. It puts them under huge pressure. They're trying to make big, huge life decisions under pressure, and they're not having time to write good essays, which is a whole nother ballgame itself, in that it's not actually an essay. It's a narrative personal statement. And so you gave us a great flow, but all I'm going to say about that is that, one, the biggest thing to understand is it's not an essay. It's a narrative personal statement. And two, what you want to do is to come to life, to be a real person who is meeting the admissions board. I loved the way you described that, is that you're sitting there on this board and you're going through all these numbers and these things that are mind-numbingly boring. And then you get to read the essays. And where does that essay actually move from facts and boring topics to a story, bringing a person and a place, almost a character, to life? So I love that. Gabrielle, obviously, as always, we will have links to your books and your website on our website at mightyparenting.com. But what is your website for people who want to explore further?
Yes, my website is www.newvisionlearning.org. New Vision Learning is all one word. newvisionlearning.org. And I write a blog. There's so much information on there. There's links to the books and so forth.
Great. And thank you so much for sharing all of this with us today, Gabrielle.
Been a great pleasure.
And thank you, Mighty Parents, for supporting the show. Whether you're sharing the podcast with friends, writing in with your appreciation or your questions, or financially supporting us, I am very grateful. It allows us to continue to get this information out for families. I create this show for you and couldn't keep it going and growing without you. If you feel you've gotten value from the show and want to support it financially, you can do that at mightyparenting.com/support. We appreciate all of you and all that you do. Remember, Mighty Parents, you are doing it. You're here, you're doing the work, and you got this. I will see you next week.